You were against the idea of creating popular music.
I don't think I knew what I wanted to do. Somehow one of his CDs or songs got to Diplo. Okay. Oh, Beyonce wants this.
Is that what All Night became?
Yeah, literally got a Lemonade tattoo. Yeah.
You should write with this guy, Henry.
Yeah.
Because he's just had a major laser hit.
Yeah.
And he had a Beyonce song. I can't believe you agreed to come onto the show. King Henry Allen on the podcast. Would you have picked a name that had better SEO if you could do it over? Because I was trying to find like some interviews with from you.
Mm-hmm.
I was like prepping for this.
And you just found interviews with the OG King?
Yeah. Or just information on him. I had to go through pages of stuff. And then I was typing in King Henry, producer. That pulled up some stuff.
Yeah.
It's a tough name to work with, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was just a SoundCloud name, right?
It was like a college SoundCloud beatmaker. My friend said to make it that, and I just made it. So no thought was put into it, especially not like SEO and searchability.
Why do you need a name though? Because that was just the thing back then?
That was the thing. Like, it feels weird in Nashville because like no one does that.
Yeah, but
so I kind of hate it.
No, do you?
Yeah.
But couldn't you just go by...
Rebrand?
Not even rebrand. Couldn't you just go by your name, or is that just not cool?
Just Henry.
Or Henry Allen, I don't know.
Well, I think it's just like...
Just Henry actually could be a good name.
That's what I've joked about that. Because then people do sit down and they're like, what do I call you? Do I call you King? And I'm like, that's just awful. Like, why would I make you call me? It's just weird. Every time I meet someone, there's that awkward... Not every time, but a lot of people be like, is your name Henry? Is your name King? Do I call you? I'm like, it's Henry. I go, just Henry.
Just so Henry.
That kind of should be it, but...
I think that'd be a great name, just Henry.
It's just too late, though.
Why is it too late? What do you mean?
I don't know.
It's done.
It's done.
Most of your credits on Spotify are Henry Allen.
I guess as a writer, yeah.
As a writer, yeah.
Producer.
Producer is King Henry.
But yeah, it does feel weird here.
These are the things you have to think about.
I know. But when you don't think about it when you're like in college and just like uploading beats to SoundCloud.
It's just like King Henry.
You're like trying to be a DJ, so it has to have like a cool name.
You're just making choices that are going to affect the rest of your life.
Yeah.
When you have no capacity to be doing so.
And you name yourself after like a pretty horrific person.
The worst king ever, right?
I was trying to like rebrand the name to be better.
You are trying to give King Henry a second chance.
Yes.
When you started out, I don't know when, but when you started out, I guess as a kid, you were against the idea of creating popular music. It, like, you didn't want to go into pop music. Is that true?
Probably. Maybe I didn't know what it was, but yeah. I definitely wasn't, like, a pop music fan, if that makes sense.
Because you were studying, what, classical guitar?
Yeah.
So you were a classical music fan? Or not even?
Yeah, I was more of a classical music fan, like, half of me. Was like film scores, film composers, classical music.
Like who? Like who are the film composers? Like the classic ones, like John Williams.
Yeah, like
or...
the classic ones, like Michael Giacchino, like John Williams. There's some more niche
Hans
ones.
Hans Zimmer.
But yeah. Like
who are
Hans
the niche
Zimmer.
Ones?
I'm trying to think now.
But what would you do? Like, would you listen to their scores?
Yeah.
And do what? Like dissect them?
Just listen. I think. I mean, I didn't maybe dissect them, but. Also, when you go to, like, college for classical music, they don't, that part of that is kind of, like, they don't care about film scores, you know? It's
really?
Kinda like, yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, depending on the school, I guess. Maybe, like, a Berkeley. But, like, where I went, it was, like, that was not really classical music. That was, like, modern pop music, essentially, I think.
What did you think you were going to do with a degree in classical guitar, though? Did you think you were going to go be a classical guitarist? Or you just thought that was the only thing that you were interested in?
No, I wanted to go to auto tech school because I was really into, like, tuning cars. And my mom was like, that's stupid. I wanted to go to Phoenix to work in a auto tech school, to study auto tech and work in...
That seems so much smarter than classical guitar, though.
Maybe from, like...
A financial standpoint.
Yes and no.
No?
But then, like, what's this... How much can you make as, like, a auto technician?
How much can you... What's the ceiling of classical guitar?
Okay, fair. Valid.
No, no, but hold on. Tell me your logic. What?
Also, I guess if you're... There's probably only five... You could probably count on one hand how many, like... Maybe more than one hand, but there's not that many classical guitarists, right?
That's my point.
a very good living.
Hardly anyone.
Most people I went to school with became teachers, right?
Yeah.
And of the classical students, there was only, what, like 8 of us who studied classical guitar. Like, no one studied classical guitar. And so then one of my friends in my class became the professor of our school. And that was, like, the biggest thing you could achieve. He took our teacher's job years later. But the rest of them just, like, teach guitar lessons. So maybe there is no real good argument. But I think my mom was like, I see more in you than an auto mechanic. Like, she maybe was like, had the hindsight to be like, I think you can at least go down the music road and there will be more opportunity. So I did. But I definitely didn't want to become a classical guitarist. I don't think I knew what I wanted to do. But it was either Phoenix, Arizona or Orange County, California. And Orange County seemed a little cooler, I think, at the end of the day.
Wait, so were you playing guitar as a kid, or you basically started playing guitar?
No, I played from like 3rd, 4th grade. I started. And I took a guitar class like after school in elementary school. Or maybe it was during school. And then at like, how old are you in 6th grade? I never know the ages of people.
I feel like when you graduate high school, you're 17, 18. Minus 4. 14, 16, 10, maybe 12, 10. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So around middle school, I started taking private lessons.
Okay.
And I just did. But that was like, I would go in. I didn't learn to read music, so I just took a CD with like Smash Mouth or the Pixies or whatever song my mom thought I should learn, like a Creedence Clearwater song or something. And I would learn it on tab. And then that was it. I'd just learn a song every week. And then in high school, there was a like classical guitar class that was kind of not very legit, but it was a class, and I took it. And so I learned like some classical guitar pieces there. But basically, I went into Chapman University like in remedial. Like, I sucked, but I was in because the professor wanted me in.
Why?
I don't know.
What do you mean? Like, did he? Do you think?
Like, I had to audition, and I was good.
So that's why.
Yeah, but I couldn't read.
But did you learn how to read doing classical guitar?
Yeah, I did. But it was like that freshman year was brutal because all the kids I went to school with like were nerds and like went to like a lot of like music high schools and stuff. So they were like sight reading, like everything. So I was going in like barely knowing like how to look at a clef and like, you know what I mean? And so that was... And eventually it figured it out, and now I probably couldn't sight read anything, but
really,
I don't know. I feel like it's gone.
Is that a valuable skill though to have?
I don't think so. Unless you're in an orchestra.
Yeah.
Like, does anyone in Nashville do anything but like charting?
Numbers. I don't know. I mean, I'm a pretty good reader.
Are you?
Yeah. But this isn't about me.
It can be. You studied music.
I studied music. Yeah. No, but you came out of the house for this. So this is about you.
I did.
What? Wait. So. But you were studying, like, solo classical guitar, or you were playing classical guitar in an orchestra?
Solo. And then, like, quartets.
I always wanted to do that.
So, like, we traveled. Like, we had a guitar quartet that, like, traveled and competed. And we did well in some places, but we weren't, like, renowned by any means. But, you know.
Wait, so how'd you learn production?
So, I took a class at our school called... music technology that was like supposed to teach us how to use Finale, you know Finale?
Yeah, the notation software, yeah.
And like teach us Pro Tools to like make a demo or something.
Whatever. Yeah.
And the teacher who taught it, who got the job, try to make the story as short as I can, but he was this really eccentric LA like kind of mad scientist electronic musician guy, but his like charisma and personality got him the job because the dean of our music school just was also this very like outgoing kind of.
Sounds like this whole school has no merit-based acceptance. They just let people in who they're
looking good. Yeah.
They want in there.
But he got the job right before I went there, so he was supposed to teach us Finale and Pro Tools. He didn't know how to use either, so instead he was like, okay, we would get together in the basement of the music school once a week for 3 hours for this class. He basically played us YouTube videos of like Bjork, and then like his friend who like plays has like perfect pitch on the theremin, just really weird stuff, and taught us how to use like reason and basically reason in the Ableton. And then he just, instead of actually following any curriculum, he was like, everyone should just make an EP of like dance music. And at the time, me and my friend at school were really into like the film scoring stuff, kind of like that was part of my music brain. But then I loved, like, do you know the French group Air with the two French guys?
No.
Or like Justice, the French DJs.
Yeah, yeah.
But more like, or like Royksopp, like really weirder kind of electronic music. And so, yeah, I was like, cool, I'll make an electronic dance EP or whatever. And then everyone loved it. So he asked to make another class, like advanced music technology, which then we just made a whole like album, each kid did. And he rented out like the classical performance hall and we had a rave. And then he got fired because they realized he wasn't doing anything he was supposed to do.
So, but I feel like this curriculum was actually the curriculum you needed.
No, it was.
This was the best thing you could have possibly been getting taught.
It was, because, and he almost like created this like, yeah, this like rebellion.
It's like the School of Rock.
It really was. It kind of, we joked about it and we called it like Music Tech was like the like label crew or whatever. And then a lot of us graduated and like, made a group called Team Supreme that was like, we did these beat challenges and like we kind of then started doing like throwing shows in LA at like the Echo and Echoplex, and it became a whole movement there. And so he really did start this like revolution of us, who a lot of us were like classical students who didn't know about dance music, and then created these just through a rave at the music school at like midnight. And like I still stay in touch with them, a lot of kids do. But yeah, Steve Nalepa is his name, and he's definitely responsible for the success of a lot of us. Cause
who else?
I'm trying to think who else is in the class. So actually, funny enough, my friend David Street, who works at BMI,
yeah,
and he has for a long time. He was in the class. There's a kid, Andrew Swanson, who produced under St. Andrew and Jemba Jemba. He was in the class, and he's the one who brought me to Diplo, which happened a little later, but like. He was in that class. From Preston James, who runs a music production school in LA.
I can't get over this guy.
And actually, my friend Mike Parviti, he also now teaches at Berkeley doing electronic music, I think, whatever the program is there.
This guy impacted all of you.
A lot of people.
And he got fired.
He did. Because he really wasn't doing anything right. But he had like a really cool 4 or 5 year window where he created this like School of Rock rebellion, and I don't know what the program is like now, like who teaches. You probably actually just go learn Finale like you're supposed to. But so we were lucky to get this like, and he would bring in like crazy guest DJs and like BBC radio hosts who ran like BBC Radio 1, like the at that time like the gatekeeper to like dance music, Marianne Hobbs. Like she came in and then I got her email and I would just send her songs. She was just playing my songs on BBC 1, which I didn't even know at the time how cool that was. In college, I was just like, oh, my song's on, like, I can stream it. But it's, like, that's, like, a big deal in the UK for dance music. So, yeah, it was, like, a weird cheat code. And then he would just invite us to shows in LA. So we'd go to, like, we'd drive up from Orange County and go to, like, dingy bass clubs in LA with him. And literally, he was Jack Black, essentially.
And were you into the dance music, or did you see it as a path that you could actually make a career out of, where classical guitar seems so limiting?
No, I fully immersed. I was like...
You were into it?
Yeah.
Why are you into it? I've never been able to get into dance music.
I think it depends how you get in. Like, for me, it was this club called Low End Theory.
Yeah.
Which was run by some, like old school LA kind of beat guys who spun vinyl, and a lot of, like, the J Dilla, like, Madlib. Like, that was kind of the inspiration, like, kind of, like, head-bobbing, sample-based instrumental music. There's a lot of like hip hop and rap there too, but I think immersing in that, like a dirty club that was like in Lincoln Heights, like not a good area, just like everything our parents would probably in college be like, don't do this. Like we would go there every Wednesday night for like 4 hours, get X's on our hands, and just like, and he'd bring in really cool guests. Like that club would bring in like, I don't know, like Tyler the Creator was like just pop in and do shows. Like I watched Tom York DJ from like 4 feet away. Like it was just this weird renowned place where like James Blake, a bunch of people would come. And I think that was the gate, like that opened the gates to me. And then, cause then I think like dance music, like you probably think more like pop leaning dance music, right?
Yeah. Which
I also wouldn't call that dance music. I'd call that like electronic.
But that's not really even like where your solo stuff is. Like that's.
No, it used to be when the SoundCloud days, it was like,
yeah,
I would sample vinyl and like make more like what you'd hear, like a beat that like you'd try to get a rapper on. But then it kind of morphed into, I feel like I, like my artist journey was more like tapping back into the classical thing and like fusing it with my newer inspirations of dance music, which is more like the James Blakes and the Jamie XX's and the, I don't know, like Tourist, or like there's, it's a lot more like UK kind of like, not like the US, you know, hard fest EDM like.
Yeah, right,
crazy
right.
Stuff.
So is So is the biggest thing you were developing at this time just your taste and your knowledge of the genre? Like, is that what was the most important thing to figure out first?
Yeah, for sure. And I think going to shows and just like, yes, hearing DJs. And in LA, you're like, you're in the mecca of like whatever's happening, it's gonna come through LA. So like, the whole French electro movement with Justice and like, what's his name, Busy P. Like that dance music genre when Hardfest started. And then like the dubstep era with like Skrillex and stuff happened, which I kind of, for me, I was like, that was when it kind of like lost me. I wasn't a big dubstep guy.
Really?
Yeah. It's just too hard.
It's too hard for Henry.
Too heavy. Yeah. It's like the heavy metal of dance music.
Yeah.
But people love it still, right?
Have you come back around to it? Like now, do you appreciate it or you still think it's too hard?
I can get down with like old school, like Rusko, like UK dubstep that was like.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's just like people just want to like get their faces melted off, which is funny because even like Skrillex has evolved from that to like doing records with Fortet in Fred Again, which is like modern day. And that's like the I feel like the main thing people want now is like less heavy,
melodic,
more melodic, kind of weird.
Yeah.
Which like Jamie XX is, I feel like, a big pioneer that early on. Still like sample based though, like kind of. So yeah, I think just immersing in all the things, and then, but then when I started producing, I kind of just followed Diplo, like someone's guidance. So I was just going.
How'd you get the internship wherever. With Diplo?
So my buddy from the class, Andrew. Again, like this teacher from our music program just brought in guests, and he brought in, like this guy Adam Freeland, who's a UK DJ producer. And we would just give our demos to everyone, like on a CD, literally. And Andrew was like the shining star. Like he was so good. It was like stupid. And so he, somehow one of his CDs or songs got to Diplo. And he asked him to do a remix for him. And then I think he was just like, hey, Andrew, just come be my like ghost producer, which is like a term that like people used to use a lot. Which I guess in theory meant like you're paid to make something and like you get no credit.
God, that's horrible, right?
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, so like he was working with Diplo, and then at some point I graduated. He was a couple years older than me. I graduated.
Wait. Diplo asked him to do a remix, and then your friend asked you to basically do the remix, but your friend was going to take all the credit?
My friend did the remixes.
Oh, for Diplo.
And got no credit.
Oh, now I get it. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, why would your friend get any credit? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Works.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Saying.
Okay.
And then I graduated, and my buddy, he was a couple years older than me, and I was at the time very lost and teaching babies and their moms like dancing and music, like 0 to 4 year olds, which was a very weird like detour in my life for a year.
Yeah.
And I was doing that, and very like, I'm like, who am I? I was still making music on the side, but that was like paying the bill. And then my buddy called me, and he was like, hey, I need someone to like just go through VSTs and save cool presets, whatever, just the trickle down work for Diplo. I was like, Santa Mar, I'll come to Burbank every day. Quit the job, started doing that. And then just made up my own wage, made up my own everything. Like there was no HR. It was just like, I just would show up and like Wes would be there sometimes. And just knew me as like the guitar guy. Because, like, Andrew didn't play instruments. A lot of these, like, DJ guys, you know, don't play instruments. They're learning programs before they're learning instruments, which is fine. But I was the opposite. So I could pick up any instrument and play it like decent. And so to Wes, I was like, it was cool because he could be like, oh, make me something like this. And I'd just pick up a guitar and then be like, oh, play some bass. Like, I play some bass. So I was like the instrumental guy. And I started just making beats for him and also doing remixes, ghost producing, which I didn't care because I had no money. So if like he wanted me to make a remix for someone.
Are there any really big remixes out there that you did that you're not credited to?
I did a lot. I mean, yeah, probably. I'm trying to think. I think like the biggest one I did was Drunk in Love, Beyonce.
Yeah.
Diplo remix.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that, which also like I would do it and then he would sit with me and like take all my bad ideas out. So like he still worked on
it. So he was involved.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. But
what are the odds though? Because I feel like he could have worked with anyone. And he ended up working with you and other people too.
Yeah.
But like, what are the odds? Do you feel like he just was so taken away by your talent?
Yeah. It's weird. Cause I always say like, I just got lucky, but I had to have talent, I think,
to stick around.
Yeah. And I think truthfully, like, so my friend Andrew and him had fallen out because I think it was a personality clash. And like, I think in those instances, like you have to be like, advice I got from his like right hand at the time, who was like his whatever publisher, A&R assistant, kind of bunch of rules guy, he was just like, we're getting lunch today, and as things got like whatever more involved with him, I wasn't published, I had no managers, I had nothing, I was just like making my own invoices with my own wage, handing them to this guy, his assistant guy. I was literally meeting him in parking lots in like LA, and he'd just give me cash. Or like he'd be like, hey, there's a shoebox in the studio under this cabinet, just take what you're owed. So God, it was like
so
kind of
trusting.
It was, yeah, I know. But so it was very like there were no rules, and so like I think I had to be careful to not be like, I'm owed more, I know, owed credit, I'm owed this, I'm owed that. I was more just like, holy shit, I'm like getting to learn from this guy, he's paying my rent and he's giving me so much free stuff, right? Like, I mean, I'm getting the trickle down of like free clothes, free like meals. Like he treated me so good, and like I think having the right personality of like knowing when to pick your battles and just like, you know, being chill. And if you put me in a room with like a massive artist, which I was immediately just, he'd be like, hey, we're going to Westlake to sit down with whoever it was, like at the time, I don't know, some pop artist, and I'd be like, okay. And I'd walk in the room and be like, this is Henry, he's sick and plays a lot of instruments. And so I had to be chill, you know, I couldn't just be like,
you are chill, right? You're like the chillest guy ever.
I hope so.
Right?
It's probably too chill sometimes, but like it may have hurt my business in some ways.
No, really? Chill,
no. No, I just, I don't know. I feel like I'm not like the outgoing, like, and especially in LA, I think personality is like so important to like hustling, right?
Yeah.
Like you got to hustle. And I think I was never that good of a hustler. Like I was good at like, I would meet people through him and like build a relationship and then make it my own. But I never had, feel like I had the energy to like go crazy.
I feel like that's why people like you though, because I feel like people in LA, it's like everything is, you probably have discussed this with people, but like everything is a hustle. But with you, it just feels like you're not trying to hustle anything.
Yeah. I think I just always took the chill road and tried to just be chill and be like a good vibe. And not like overstep or like, you know, get cocky or like arrogant when you're in a situation with a bigger artist that like, I'm not there because of me, I'm there because of him. So like, I'm always going to respect their relationship and just subtly be like, don't forget about me. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so then like all the remixes and whatever production stuff, eventually I would just make him beats. I'd make beats because he'd be like, hey, I'm with XYZ today, make some beats and come to the studio. And so I made like guitar beats, whatever. I made a beat and we went and wrote a song with Teron, who's this guy from Trinidad. Him and his brother were writers. And it then through the process of the A&R world in LA became a Beyonce, like, oh, Beyonce wants this. And I had nothing at that point. No managers, no cuts, just
remixes. Is that what All Night became?
Yeah. And so then it's getting more and more serious and they're like, oh shit, well, this kid is just like no one, and he wrote half of this song. We got to figure this out. And so like his manager called me and was like, hey, so like, do you want a deal or anything? I was like, I don't know, sure, like, I don't know. And he's like, okay, cool. And the next thing I know, Ron Perry calls me, who at the time was running Songs.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, who's your lawyer? I was like, I don't have one. He's like, okay, I want to send you a deal. I was like, okay, I get you sent to my email. And it sends me like a deal.
Like a publishing
deal. Yeah, to my email. And I'm just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And luckily my teacher, Steve, I was like, hey, do you know any lawyers? And he connects me with a lawyer who tried to help me through the deal. Eventually, she got fed up dealing with it because there were a lot of factors going into finding like a middle ground on this thing. But then I found another lawyer through someone else in LA who's still my lawyer. And whatever, 6-7 months later, got a deal done.
It took that long to get the deal done?
Yeah.
Done?
Probably at least. So I did deal with Ron at Songs. And Wes was involved somehow. And then as Beyonce did or does still probably, just tells you nothing, even when you're him. Like, yeah, I had to sign NDAs to like listen to the song. It was just crazy. And then it just came out because that was like how they kind of rolled at the time. Because I remember that was like a surprise album and Lemonade. It came out as a movie. Yeah, or yeah. Something. Exclusively on Tidal, which was stupid.
Yeah.
So
when that came out though, did that mean a lot to you? Were you like, holy fuck? Or were you like, okay, I guess I'll get to keep doing this? Or like what was your personal connection and excitement level?
I think it was cool.
To getting a Beyonce cut.
It was cool. I mean, I think like not many people, obviously their first cut is something that substantial. And I think I did recognize that. And obviously growing up, like my age, your age, probably like Destiny's Child, Beyonce, that was like some of the craziest stuff.
Yeah.
And I think now she's this legacy artist who's still really respected. But no, it was crazy. I remember it coming out. We were at Coachella because it was during Coachella. And I had a house with him. We were just writing all week because he was headlining Coachella, Major Lazer was. So it was also weird because I was deep in this Coachella stuff and doing a writing camp all week. But it came out. But I just remember, yeah, taking a car and like driving around Palm Springs, listening to it. I was trippy for sure. But I think probably at that point too, like that, you know, pop stuff like that. I think that song had been done for months or, you know, half a year. And we were just waiting. So at that point, like there's already so much music going on that, and I was traveling and flying here. And like, it was just like so much happening. It was such a like spiral at that point, but still honestly the coolest thing ever. I literally got a Lemonade tattoo because
of it.
It's my first song.
Why are you not credited as a producer on it? You're only listed as a writer.
It's probably an error on Spotify.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Actually, I think you know what that song specifically.
Yeah.
It credits someone else, but it's like Columbia's a master.
But it's like you.
No, yeah, it's me and Wes. Yeah.
And then what was the next? What was the next thing you had come out? Cold Water.
Yeah, probably that. There's a lot of like other, things in the middle that were probably not nearly as substantial, but that was another like bigger one, I think. Yeah,
that song was a huge hit.
Yeah,
Major Lazer and Justin Bieber.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
that was probably more crazy to me because Bieber was still such a massive.
Yeah,
he still is. But and that was obviously like a single that went to radio, and the All Night Beyonce thing was cool. I think like,
but it wasn't a single.
And I think the song was cooler and like. But Cold Water was also cool. I mean,
yeah.
And it did so much that it was like fun to.
That's the reason you met Sasha, isn't it? Because didn't her publisher say,
yeah,
you should write with this guy, Henry?
Yeah.
Because he's just had a Major Lazer hit.
Yeah.
And he had a Beyonce song.
Yeah.
So then they put her in a room with you, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason.
Yeah.
And then what happened? There was an artist who didn't show up.
Yeah.
So you guys got to write together?
Yeah. We were supposed to write with Maggie Lindemann. He's like still somehow, I think, doing stuff.
And she didn't show up, right?
And Sasha came from like a Coffee Bean shift because she was working.
She was working at Coffee Bean, yeah.
And didn't tell me because she was embarrassed, which is sad. But, yeah, no, we sat down and she was like, "Yeah, she's not coming." And I was like, "Well, why are we writing a song for her?" And she was like, "I don't know." And I was like, "Well, let's just make something we like then." And we wrote that day what became my first artist song, actually, as King Henry.
Which was what song?
I'll Be There.
I'll Be There.
Me and her wrote it. And she sang on it. And then the next time we wrote her first song as an artist, which was Ready Yet.
Oh.
And then we kind of just became best friends for like a year. And we would just write every day, like our session. I would just be at Wes's house, and if she finished, I'd be like, "Come over." We would like get stoned and make songs, and yeah, we just like wrote like a ton of songs, mainly about being unhappy in our relationships that we were separately in.
And then what happened? You both got out of the relationships, and then finally,
yeah, I got out of mine, and yeah, she's the first person I called as a friend, genuinely. And she came over and hung out and was just like, "Dang, like, good for you," whatever. She knew, like, she was like my therapist through it. And yeah, then like 3 or 4 months later, she was like, she ended hers. And then I think a week later, we went on a writing trip, which Diplo had gotten this like house in the Cayman Islands on a total, like, sat next to some guy on a plane and was like, "Hey, I run this studio. Like, if you ever want to have a camp, we'll do everything. It's free." And so he just then asked me to, like, "Who do you want to come to writing camp?" And I just was like, "I don't know." So I just invited like Sasha and other people we liked writing with. And we, like, a week later went to the Cayman Islands for a week and wrote songs and maybe fell in love. I don't know.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was the most brilliant thing to say, though, in that first session, which was, "Let's just write something that we want to write," or yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
I do remember that very specifically because, as you know, even still here, it's very targeted. If you're like, "Well, this person wants to write about," and in pop, it's even more like Maggie Lindemann or whoever, like the young pop girl is only going to want to sing about this, this, or this. But yeah, I don't know. I think I was just like, I was like, "Let's just make something cool," which is kind of still my mentality, unless it's very targeted. But I think like the goal should always make the best song. And there's going to be someone who likes it, hopefully. But I get that sometimes it's specific. But, yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, she's like, "Let's just make a cool song."
God, what a love story.
Yeah, I know.
I need a love story like
it's
this.
It's cringy, but I guess it's great. I don't know. And then...
No, it's a great story.
Yeah, and we're 7 years in later.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Dogs and a house.
Three chihuahuas.
Three chihuahuas.
And a house.
And a house in Nashville.
Yeah.
Were you guys just so fed up with LA? Is that why you left LA?
Yeah, I think it was a combo, like a perfect storm of COVID, which was a really tough place to be there.
Yeah.
Like waiting in line for an hour at a grocery store in the Valley or La Cañada.
Where are you going,
like,
to get groceries? Are you an Erewhon guy or no?
No, never.
Absolutely
never.
No.
I've never been to Erewhon.
You've never been to Erewhon?
No.
Where do you shop in LA? Somewhere else.
Sprouts. Sprouts guy.
Oh, I love Sprouts.
Sprouts is great.
It is great, yeah.
Or Trader Joe's. That was my
Trader Joe's. Okay, so the lines at Sprouts and Trader Joe's in LA were just off the charts.
Unheard of. Yeah.
Unheard of lines.
45 minutes, an hour to get in.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I think also that time too, like, she was kind of starting the artist thing. And my relationship with Wes.
No, I feel like she'd already been an artist before COVID. Because I saw her come through.
I think she was. I mean, I guess. I think it was she was spending a lot more time doing that.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And not writing as much, like, pitch writing. And my relationship with Wes at the time was still great, but he was also, like, slowing down a bit, I think, and just DJing more and traveling more and kind of, like, making up for lost time. I feel like that he, you know, spending more time with his kids, just surfing. Like, he kind of was transitioning into a new lifestyle, which he then moved to Malibu, like, very, very, very deep Malibu. And then, yeah, with COVID, and it was just, like, we were, like, we woke up one day, and she was, like, I think it was, like, on my birthday in June. She was, like, "Hey, do you want to move to Nashville in 2 weeks?" And I was, like.
In 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Are you guys that spontaneous?
No, but we were then.
Why? She had spent time in Nashville, right? I guess you guys had both come through?
We both had, because I was coming here.
Just to write in.
Well, like, Ron Perry made me and Wes come here to work with Sam Hunt in, like, maybe 2016.
Do you have a Sam Hunt cut?
Well, Sasha and I did a song with him that she put out. And I've done a few things with him. I did some stuff recently that I think one of them came out, and he, but I made a lot of songs with him back then.
Yeah.
And then, cause we were trying to do a Diplo song with him forever, and we wrote a bunch of stuff that came out with other artists cause he didn't want to do it. So I was coming here to work with him. And then one time I brought Sasha cause Wes was like, let's bring Sasha. Cause he loves Sasha's writer. So we did like a week with Sam Hunt, and like, that's when, then Sam was like, I'll bring some friends to write with us. And I'm like, great. And so he brought Hardy one day, Shane McAnally one day, Josh Osborne one day. And of course, me at the time, I'm like, I don't know who these people are because I'm just a stupid, naive LA guy.
Yeah. But did they feel like they were great writers? Having no context of who they were.
Yeah.
Were they great writers in the room? Were you like, oh my God, these people are incredible?
Yeah, no. It blew our minds. I was like, I haven't been writing songs like according to these people.
That's how it felt. Yeah. Like those people are that good. I know the narrative is that they are, but when you're really in the room with them,
they are. Yeah.
They're really that good.
Yeah.
Because they're great at coming up with lyrics, or they're great at melody, or like why are
lyrics,
like, lyrics.
I think so. Like, I think Shane, like the first people I met here. Yeah. Like Shane, Nicole Galleon.
Yeah.
Josh Osborne, like Hardy.
Because they're poets.
Even like the Gorley, like they're just like, it's stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason they are so successful. They're just so good with words and so quick. So yeah, those are the first trips we took here. And then the Diplo like country thing that he did, I got introduced to like Seth England.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a song with the Morgan song.
Yeah. And so then I was coming here to work with the Heartless, Big Loud guys. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I met all those guys like, oh, this is cool. Like this is country music, but it's like, we're getting stoned and like day drinking and like making stupid shit. So then I was like, oh, Nashville's fun. And then, so we had both come here a few times. And then in COVID, Sasha actually had already bought a house here because I had a place in LA. And she was like, well, we are living together. Why would I get another place in LA? So she bought a house in Northwest Nashville and rented it to some friends. But we had like a bedroom so we could take trips here. So then COVID happened and we had a place to land. But she was like, I don't want to pay estate tax. And I was like, sick, same. So if we were here by July 1st with like driver's licenses in hand, we could file taxes here.
Yeah.
So we just got in a car, packed a storage box, left the house, and rented it to Danny Silverstein.
The house in LA?
Yeah.
Is that where he lives now?
No, not anymore. He doesn't live there now. But he lived there for a year. So Danny became our like tenant for a year.
No way.
Yeah. And then he left and I got my other friend to rent it. And then after like 2.5 years of being a landlord there, was like, nah, I just was ready. And we then got a place here together. So we kind of just consolidated.
Where are you from? Are you from LA originally?
New Mexico.
You're from New Mexico?
Yeah.
So does this feel more aligned with New Mexico?
For sure.
Weirdly?
Oh, yeah. That was also my problem with LA, I think, is like, I'm not a city guy.
It's too spread out,
I don't like cities.
Yeah.
It's very spread out. I grew up like outside of Albuquerque on like essentially a farm, like a cornfield with like horses. And so my safe place was like a desert, open desert. I'd drive my bike, be home by sunset kind of thing. So that was my comfort zone, which Nashville, we live in like, south by like, you know, 10 minutes south of here, like Oak Hill, like by the, it feels like a forest, which is sick. Like my dream is to live in the desert again, but at least here it's like nature, which I think I didn't get in LA. You have to drive like substantial.
There's some good hiking out there.
There's some good hiking.
There's nature. You just have to like get
to. But
it's like it's like a whole thing.
Looking at like a skyline filled with like smog.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of always was like,
This is the place.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we didn't know we'd love it so much. And then I think just writing here and the people here, which I was trying to think when we met for the first time, we weren't living here.
No way. Yeah.
But where did we meet? Do you remember?
Was it a show? Were you on the road with Sasha?
Might have been a show or like, I can't remember.
Because I came to, because of Danny.
Yeah.
That's why I came to the shows in the early days.
Was Danny playing?
Danny was playing.
Yeah.
She did the High Watt headline.
Okay.
And then we did the Basement.
Yeah.
Did she just play the Basement?
She just did the Basement. Yeah,
but she did the Basement.
Yeah.
I don't know when.
Yeah. That's probably
you've
right.
Just, I just feel
pre-tornado.
Like you've always been in my life, Henry.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
No, for real though. But on the way here, I was like, I asked even Sasha. I was like, when did? Because I remember like the first time hanging out, but I was like, I don't know where it was.
Did we hang out at Attaboy? Remember that bar? We had one night.
That's what it was.
Is that where we met?
Yeah.
And we were in this like private area
at
Attaboy.
That is it.
Is that
right.
Why were we hanging out? Was that? Did you guys? Had you guys just play a show or something?
Maybe Basement. Yeah.
Maybe the Basement East.
But
yeah.
You're right. Attaboy. Is where we first
I think
out.
That's where we first met. Yeah.
And that was like, yeah, pre-tornado, because then the Basement.
Easily, because, yeah.
Was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, you're right. But was Danny there? He must have been there.
He must have been there. Okay. I was only hanging out with Danny. Danny was my guy.
Yeah. How did you know Danny? From
school.
Okay, from Berkeley.
We used to record at like 5 a.m.
So funny.
Because there was a studio by Berkeley where you could book it for really cheap. From like
okay.
midnight to 5 a.m. So we would go in there at midnight
and
record Danny's songs.
Wow.
Maybe we did that a couple times. Yeah.
Dang.
And he was always great. I think Danny could put out a folk album. This is Danny Silverstein, who now has a solo. What's his solo?
Slim Dan. Yeah. It's really good. Yeah.
It's fucking unbelievable. But I think he could put out like a Ryan Adams like folk album.
Yeah.
That would just be absolutely mind blowing. I think that's what he should do.
He's really good. He's really figuring out like what it is now, which is cool. Like his music, he put a lot of. He obviously spent years before he did it. Like he could have put out. I mean, he did put out music, like we all did. That
no, he
lives
took
on the
he
internet
took forever.
But this Slim Dan took him so long.
Yeah.
To figure out, and you can tell he didn't like shortcut it. It's so good. The songwriting's so unique. It's so Danny. We saw him. He just did open for Remy Wolf on tour. We saw him here in Nashville.
Yeah. Nobody invited
so
me to that.
Good.
I saw on social media after when he was leaving town.
He didn't invite us for the record. We had to be like, we're coming.
Oh, fuck. Really? That's what I should have done. But I didn't even know what was happening. The next day, I FaceTimed him. He was in the van or whatever. And I was pissed at him. I was like, Danny, how come you didn't tell me you were in town? And he was like, oh, I don't know. Sorry. I was like, Danny.
I know. That's how I relate, though. Because it's like, you don't ever want to be like, hey, guys, come to my show. It's like.
Yeah.
But
it's tough because like I feel like you have to know. Then, like, for your really good friends, like, Danny, I consider a good friend. It's like, I wanted to go to the show. Like, I really wanted to see it.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah. But he's great. He's, his music's so good.
Yeah. Why'd you sign a Big Machine?
No one else wanted me.
No, really? Fuck off.
So Big Machine was, I want to say, some of my first trips here to write. And my first writing in town ended up being with Big Machine writers.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Hurd, Laura Veltz, Jesse Joe. And then my manager now, who was my manager before his assistant at Geffen in LA, he quit right around the time I fired my manager. And he was like, hey, by the way, I'm actually taking a job at Big Machine to start like the LA office.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, cool. Well, do you still want to like manage me? Is that cool? And he's like, yeah. So I then kind of inherently just made friends with the Big Machine people, like here, like Alex Heddle, Michelle, Mike Molinar. And I was published at the Times, so there wasn't really any like conversations. Like I had did a publishing deal right when I moved to Nashville, another one with like Cobalt, just an admin deal. So I was very much like spoken for. But they were still just like awesome people, you know, just like that I would hang with. And then I just kind of got to know them really well. And I did like a joint venture with them to sign someone a couple years ago. And I did it with Big Machine, with Mike. So they became like kind of my first like music publishing family here. And so I got out of my deal with Cobalt like a year ago, year and a half ago, and kind of was like, okay, what do I do? I live in Nashville full time, like for sure now. I wasn't like back and forth. So then you're like, do I do an LA deal? Do I do a Nashville deal? I live here. So like, and I'm not really dying to like go try to make pop music in that way anymore in LA. Cause truthfully, I think that's not really a thing anymore. Like massive pop songs are written here. Some of the biggest, I mean, look at like whatever.
They are, right?
Noah Kahan, like he's here.
Yeah,
making
yeah.
a record. Like,
even some of the Sabrina Carpenter songs are written here.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah.
I think you don't need to be in LA anymore. I think it's just who you want to work with.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of people want to come out here anyway for Nashville, for what it does and what it like brings, the songwriting, the energy, whatever. So I saw no real reason to like try to do like a LA publishing deal. And like I knew Big Machine. And I kind of, so yeah, I mean, they just already had kind of a place in my brain as like, this is somewhere I'd love to be. And they've also done a good job bridging the kind of gap a little bit with like, they're part of Hybe now, which.
Yeah, right, right.
They're super dialed in like K-pop in Korea, which I think I'm going to go to Korea next year and do some writing.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
I want to come. How can I go with you? What excuse do I need? Can I just be your assistant?
Make a documentary or something. I don't
Can
know.
Can we do a documentary?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
I don't know. It shouldn't be about me, but like, I don't know. Just
let's do it. No, okay. Why can't it be about you?
I don't know.
I think it could be about you. Just writing music in North Korea.
In
South Korea. That would be a good documentary.
No, country music in North Korea. Yeah, I love it.
I want to go to South Korea with you.
Yeah.
I'm never going to go to South Korea with you. Let's be honest.
Well, you can come. I mean,
No, I'm going to get in your way. I'm not going to come. King Henry on the podcast, he's one of those people that people point to when you think about Nashville and how it's more than country music. They go, oh, Sasha and Henry are here. It's more than just country. That's what people say.
That's really nice of them to say.
Some people say that, I swear.
Some people also say they live here now.
Yeah, some people also say that. Do you think the same group of writers in a room in Nashville have the potential to write a better song than the same group does in LA? Like, are there vibes just being in the room?
Hmm. Like any song, like a pop song?
Like, if you're with the same, just a pop song or anything, do you think that when you're in the room writing in Nashville, do you have a better shot of writing a better song than the same group of writers does in LA, in a room in LA? Do you just think everyone's in a better mood here? They didn't have to drive far to get to the session.
I do.
But I don't want to force that answer on you. Is that really what you think?
No, I personally have never been. Yeah, also like starting at what, 1, 2, 3, 4 p.m. Sometimes you're starting a session at like 10 p.m. in LA. I'm like, that was never my. I've always been the wake up and like work kind of person. Like make my best stuff at 9, 10 in the morning. So Nashville starting at 11. You're fresh. And like, I think also people having somewhere to be, whether it's like picking up their kids or some, you know, people I think respect each other's time here more. And they're not like, yeah, we're going to do a session, but like,
it
could go all night. So like, you can't have plans. I'm like, no, like I want to have a normal life too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's being rushed, but there's also being like, if we can't have something good in like 4 or 5 hours, like it's not good. I mean, I'm a believer in that. Like, and the first time I've actually ever had sessions not get anything has happened here. And the first time it happened, I was like so discouraged. I was like, I'm terrible. What have I done? But I think it's just fair that like, if you're not getting somewhere in 3-4 hours, that's okay. But you know, if you're halfway through like a verse or maybe like a chorus, let's like
kill it.
And in LA, I think people will just like beat something like that for like 10 hours. And then like next thing you know, I'm so lost. I don't even know what the song's about. I'm like, but I think the energy and inspiration here is much better. And yeah, I mean, you're not driving 48 minutes to a session and then trying to figure out where to park. It's not street sweeping. Although I guess parts of Nashville now can be.
Now it's getting crazy. But most of the time, most of these sessions, like most of these writers' rooms that you go to have good parking, right?
Yeah. Or yeah, like it's at someone's house. I mean, it's like.
And you just park at the house.
I'm at home. I don't leave.
Do you guys have a sick home studio?
It's pretty sick.
It's pretty sick, right?
Yeah.
Can you do like a full band there? Or no?
Yeah, I have a live room with like a kit and an upright, and then I have a vocal, separate vocal room and like a middle kind of room where, yeah, you could. It was actually, so we got the house from, we call it Lifehouse because we bought it from Lifehouse, Jason Wade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hanging by a Moment. You probably heard it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was the other song? You and Me. That was a big one. I'm not going to sing it, but you know it.
No, give us a couple of bars.
No, I'm not going to give you a couple of bars. But he got the house from Nathan Chapman, who put the studio there. And he did all the Taylor Swift stuff there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I say so it's got it has good energy. This, like, good or bad, depending on who you are.
Yeah.
I think it's good. She's a badass. Great songwriter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I like to think it's got a good energy. But, yeah, it's... I mean, again, and talking about Nashville and L.A., I could have... there's no way I could have that studio in L.A. I mean, it's like it would cost so much to have that at your home, right?
Yeah, right,
so,
right.
So to have a separate studio at home that, like, isn't attached to you... It is attached to your house, but no one goes through your house, right? Just separate entrance. I walk down 2 minutes before my session. It's amazing.
And everybody comes to you.
Yeah.
God, that's such a good life.
I do like writing separate though sometimes. Like not being the producer.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the track guy. Because it is fun. And I feel like being in Nashville, I've become a much better writer. Like, it's fun to go just be a writer for a day and not be responsible for like a demo.
So who comes over like on the, like, is it like artists who come over or other writers? And are you writing like every day basically or 5 days a week?
I'll probably write like 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days are like production things I'm working on.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of artist sessions, a lot of like, honestly, a lot of artists from not from Nashville who like people want to come in here, and, like yeah. from LA or from New York, from London, like, which is still strange to me, but it's just what's happening.
You're a big draw to the city.
Oh yeah. They're coming for me.
You're a big draw to Nashville. I think you're
Nashville
part of it.
Nashville owes me.
Yes. I think you're a part of it though. I do. I really do.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, and then just pitch writing too, like Big Machines. I mean, I'm getting
yeah.
You know, there some of the like writers there, like Matt Roy is like one of their writers, and he's like, I've written with him a few times, and he's like kind of gives me that same feeling like a Shane or someone where I'm just like, holy shit, like you're insane.
Yeah,
like you just like let him go for a minute. Yeah, he's like.
They've got it.
Matt Roy's insane. He wrote this song actually that came 100%er that was on Riley Green record called.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the song, but I know what you're talking about.
It's like How Early Is Too Early to Drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Insane. I listened to the demo of Matt Roy's like every day. It's just so good still. But anyway.
God. I got to start a band. I got to start writing songs.
Yeah, why aren't you?
I don't know. I'm not a very good songwriter. I'm really not. I feel like I should be in a band, though. I got to start a band.
You do play sometimes,
I
though.
Play guitar. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You shred harder than me.
I don't know about that, but I definitely play guitar.
You play guitar better than me unless I'm picking up a classical.
Look, I have no classical chops. Maybe. But my thing is, I feel like I want to be in a band, but I don't sing and I don't really write songs. So I'm kind of at a loss. Like, I'm going to not be a key member in a band unless it's my band.
Right.
Like, I'm putting this out in the world. Like, I want to start a band. But I don't know how to do it. Like, I don't know what capacity I should start a band in.
I don't know. You know, my neighbor actually started a band, and she's just shreds.
And is she successful?
I think so. Grace Bowers. Do you know her?
Oh, my God. She's your neighbor?
Yeah, she's on my
street. I love Grace Bowers.
Yeah.
She's unbelievable.
I actually, I see her, like, every day.
Does she have her own house? She's, like, 17.
No.
Is her parents around?
Yeah, her
parents' house, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But she drives, I see her every day on my street. She's
She's been on the podcast.
Oh, sick.
She's unbelievable.
She's crazy.
But the thing is, I'm not as, like, I don't play like she plays. She's unreal.
No, I know. But, like.
What do you mean, you know? You were so quick to agree with me. You didn't have to do that.
She shreds.
She's unbelievable. She did Starband.
Yeah.
John Osborne produced her.
Oh, sick. Okay.
Her,
Because I've been kind of watching her because she's maybe lived on our street for 2 years now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, so much has happened in 2 years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
She's like,
would you get her into the studio and do something with her?
I haven't.
I don't know what that would be, but that would be.
I don't know either. I should have her over though.
You should.
I feel like she doesn't need me though. She's like crushing it.
But
she's
I feel sick. Like you and Sasha and Grace could write something really
maybe
really killer.
Yeah. We'll have to.
Or if you need guitar on something that you're working on, call her over.
Yeah, I'll call you.
Call me. You don't want to call me. Call Grace. She's your next door neighbor. King Henry Allen on the podcast. He just put out an EP like a week or two ago. Archives.
I did.
It is what it says. It's archived material.
Yeah.
That's finally been released. Seen the light of day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why'd you do that? You felt like you had to put it out? Or you just felt like, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I make so much stuff in between working with other people.
Yeah.
And I never know what it is. And like, but it exercises a part of my brain that doesn't get exercised writing songs or producing artists. And I have so much stuff. But putting yourself out there is terrifying, and putting music out is terrifying because then it's like the stuff that comes with it now, which I still don't really do, but like promotion and TikTok and all this stuff. But I was at a phase where like I'm also going down a new road with my artist project with a friend of mine in LA that we're doing it together, and it's like much weirder, more in the like you're like on a beach in Spain or like Cappadocia, Turkey or something. It's much like Burning Man, like kind of weirder stuff, which is totally fun. So this is like I was kind of letting go of this era of my King Henry stuff, and those were like six ideas that I had, just that I was kind of like, you know what, I'm gonna put these out and like close the door on that kind of chapter of that project sort of. I'm also saying this like it's like Taylor Swift or something, but
no, I get it though. And then, wait, but are you going to put out new music?
Yeah, like, so all the new stuff will be with my friend Phil.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, it'll probably just be both of our names, so it'll still be, maybe it'll be Just Henry. No, it'll
I
be...
I love the idea of Just Henry. How great is that?
It'll just be, like, King Henry and Von Bach, who's my friend Phil in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, just, like, closing a door on that kind of a bunch of unfinished ideas that I was, like, a few I liked that I didn't necessarily want to, like, put a single name on it or marketing, but it was just like, here's some stuff, I'm moving on. So, which Sasha like jokes, she didn't even know it was coming out. She got really mad at me because really? I'm like so scared of like self-promotion. I can't even tell my wife.
I can't believe you agreed to come onto this show. to be honest, I'm thrilled that you did, but it just seems so out of character.
It is. I'm fully panicking inside every moment of this.
Dude, this has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me. I'm surprised you wanted me.
No, I got the press release in. I've always been fascinated by you. I just think you're a fascinating guy because you're so talented, but you don't take up the energy in the room, but I feel like you could. I feel like your talent kind of does.
It's very nice of you to say. Yeah, I think my biggest fear is taking up the energy in the room.
Yeah. What's that about? Because you just... It's just not important to you, or you don't want to.
I don't know. I think since I've been a kid, I was like the shy, like just shy, super shy,
yeah,
super introverted. Which doesn't really bode well for like being a producer, songwriter, artist. Because so much of it is being a good hang, right? Like, I think so at least. I mean, I think you look at the most successful, some of the most successful people in our industry, whether it's like behind the scenes, songwriter, producer, or an artist, you have to have a personality and be outgoing. You can't be shy for the most part.
I feel like producers potentially can be.
They can be. Producers get away with it because like it's cool to be like weird and like elusive. Which,
maybe.
Like, I joke that I'm like, no, I'm just like elusive. But like I think it only works if you're like crushing it. Then it's like people want to know more. It definitely works for the producers. But like to be a songwriter and go on with like an artist or other people, like you have to have... You're almost a salesperson, right? Part of it. Like, you're kind of selling an idea. Because, I mean, half the time you probably get an artist to put out a bad song if you're a good salesperson, right? Like some of the biggest writers are just, like, good salespeople. And whether that's pop or country, like, if you convince the artist that they need that song and they believe it, then, like, you've done your job, right? Versus, like, there's still obviously, like, people who are scared of their own shadow who are incredible writers who can get massive cuts too, but personality is so important, but I think that was a big hurdle for me once I went out onto my own, aside from like the Diplo stuff, and moved to Nashville. Then it was even a bigger step. And still to this day, like going into rooms in Nashville with these like heavy hitting Nashville writers with like, you know, X amount of number ones, it's intimidating, because it's like, you still feel really insecure about like your, you know, my repertoire here of like cuts. But, you know, I think I can bring something to the table maybe that other people don't. But yeah.
Do you think when you're in a room with like Shane McAnally, he's a pretty big personality, yeah, right? Do you think that the energy comes up to his personality, or do you think that everything kind of mellows out a little bit in a good way when you guys are in the room together, or with a writer who's got a high energy? Do you try to pull to their level, or does everything kind of balance out in a good way?
Yeah, I think someone like Shane, or he's very specific because he is very like high energy, and he is like, he'll command the room.
Yeah.
Just because he's like, his personality's just like chaotic but awesome and like energetic. So he's going to like guide the energy. So you're going to try to be like, keep up with it. But like, you know, then there's like, I don't know, like an Ashley Gourley, who I've only written with a couple times, but like totally the opposite, like mellow, super mellow. And so like the energy is going to kind of stay mellow. Or like a Sam Hunt, like the mellowest dude on earth.
Yeah,
it's going to stay super mellow. But yeah, I think I'm always trying to match the vibe, but you definitely don't want to like bring down the energy, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's what I'd be worried about, bringing down the energy.
No, you're like the most like charismatic, outgoing dude. You'd be perfect in sessions.
You think I could be in sessions?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I'm not a writer though. Do you know any people who aren't writers who can hang around sessions and like still write music?
That's not, LA's like made off of that.
Fuck, really?
It's like guys who just hang out and like,
I'm a hang guy.
Nod their heads and be like, that's sick. And then they have,
do you think I could have hits doing
20%
that?
20% of a number.
How
one.
Much money is in songwriting? Can I make some good money, yeah, if I get some big hits?
Yes. You know what?
I'm taking the wrong path.
I think it's the time.
It's
for like
the time.
A dope instrumentalist. Why not?
What do you mean it's time for a dope instrumentalist?
Like that is your writing. Like your guitar writes, right?
Like I should do an instrumental record.
No, like you go into sessions. If you write a good part that leads to a good melody, I mean, that's what pop music is built off of, right?
Yeah.
Like there's dudes in the Max Martin camps or these other camps that probably never spoken a word, but they have like 20% of like the biggest Ariana Grande song ever.
My problem is I don't want to go through a suck period. I'm worried that I'm going to suck for months or like a year. I don't know if my self-esteem can handle that.
I feel that really hard, yeah.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
How do I get over that?
You just have to take it to the face.
Yeah. But then I worry that I'm not passionate enough about it, because I feel like if I was more passionate about it, I would be willing to suck. But if I'm not willing to suck, maybe I just don't care enough. This is what I wrestle with. I do want to be in a band, though. I think I could be in a great band.
I think you should.
Yeah.
I think you'll know when it's right.
I'll know when it's
this
right.
This is honestly, you're crushing this, and you're so good at this. Like,
I appreciate
you're doing
you
something
that.
Right. Seriously, this is like, I've seen you. I don't want to be like, oh, I've seen you grow. But like from when I met you, which was like, let's say 6-7 years ago.
I think you've known me that long.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what you were doing then with Nashville.
I was a guitar player.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you like touring?
I was out of school. I think when I met
shredding.
When I met you, I literally just graduated college. I was like doing nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like I feel like, is this kind of always what you've wanted to do a little bit? Like
this is really what I wanted to do.
Okay. You're right.
Yeah.
And then
And music too. Like music, yes, and this. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You have such a personality for this. And then like
I appreciate it.
I became friends with Bobby Bones because he was sort of a neighbor to us, but like friend of a friend. So I was playing golf with Bobby Bones. And then I saw like you doing the whole Bobby Bones thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and I was like, is this going to work? Like,
worked.
I was like, this is so sick.
Do you golf with Bobby?
I haven't in a while, but I was.
Is he a good golfer?
He is good, yeah.
You're really into golf.
I am. But I'd be better. You'd think I'd be better at it, but I just don't play enough.
No, but I texted Danny last night. I was like, I got Henry coming in. Like, what should I ask him? And Danny was like, just ask him about golf. That's all he said.
That makes sense.
That's what you
said.
I love
golf. Nashville made me love golf. Everyone plays golf here.
I've never hit a golf ball in my life outside of putt-putt.
Networking. This is going to be big for you. I see golf in your future.
You see golf in my future?
Yeah.
No, the problem is nobody wants to take me golfing. Like, I asked Bobby to take me golfing.
He won't take you golfing?
No, because I literally said to him, I was like, Bobby, I've never hit a golf ball in my life.
Okay.
Like, can we go golfing? And he said to me, I think he was kidding, but with a really straight face, he was like, why would I take you golfing? Like, as if, like, I'm not going to teach you how to golf. Like, if you knew how to golf, we could go golfing. But valid. I'm not going to waste a day teaching you how to golf.
Honestly, valid, though, because where he plays at Brentwood
is, like,
where I play with Ryan Hurd, too.
Yeah.
You really can't go out there and, like, learn to golf. You have to be able to play.
This is the problem I run into. I'm convinced I'm never going to develop another skill in my life. I'm not gonna be able.
You need to go. Where do you live in Nashville?
Well, I'm West End by Centennial Park.
Oh, that's perfect. Go to McCabe.
What's McCabe?
The golf course.
The golf is it right there?
Driving range. Yeah, it's right in like Sylvan Park.
And golf.
Go hit balls.
Go hit balls.
And go play golf there. It's cheap. It's a city course. It's probably the best city course. You can go out there and be paired with someone who will.
Like an
also
instructor?
Shoot like 120. No, just like you can suck out there and no one's gonna care.
That's what I need.
But you can't go to like a private club and suck.
Right.
Too bad. I'll still suck, but like.
But you can hit.
I'll still shoot like an 85.
You can still shoot. How do I suck as a songwriter though? Last thing. You just told us how to get into golfing. How to be a bad golfer.
Yeah.
How to do it and get a little bit better.
Yeah.
How do I hang out as a bad songwriter in a safe space and get a little bit better?
How do you hang out in a safe space and get a little better? I mean, write songs with your friends.
All my friends, though, this is the problem. I missed a key window to do this.
They're already, like, done. They're like, you're too far gone.
All my friends are hit songwriters that I could do this with.
Well, then they should.
I need, like, new friends.
No, if they're good friends, they'll let you in.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think so.
Maybe I'll ask them.
I feel like all the, at least my, every time I'm, like, meet a new artist or a younger songwriter, I feel like everyone, now it's very, like, they just have their little clique. And they, like, I'll be like, oh, who'd you write this with? And they'll be like, oh, just my friend X.
Exactly,
and
yes.
It's like people just write with their friends. And then you kind of create this little collective of songwriters. And, like, someone gets a publishing deal. And then it kind of
That's exactly out. What happens. But all my friends that are, like, my age group, they all have publishing deals and they're writing hit songs.
Yeah.
I miss the window to join their friend group.
This is cool. This is cooler. Songwriting's not that cool. This is cool.
This is cool. This is what we're doing. You're making me feel good now.
You're going to events. You get to interview people. You get to cool shit. Trust me.
No, the grass is greener. The grass is always greener. Remember that.
I agree, but you don't want this. You're on the right track. Not to sound like an old wise person here, but
King Henry on the podcast. We got him out of the house.
Out of the house. Trying to tell Zach Kuhn he's on the right track in life.
I needed this today. I needed this this morning.
I've been watching you for years.
Have you?
Right track. Yes.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Ever since I met you.
That's true. I've been watching you too.
So don't go into songwriting.
Okay.
You should be in a band and shred.
I want to be in a band.
Tell our neighbor, Grace Bowers, who you know, to let you in.
No. I couldn't be in that band.
You're too old for the band?
Probably. But also, I want to be... Here's the thing. If I'm in a band, I want to be the guitar focus.
Okay, she...
There's no way I'll live up to her guitar playing.
Very fair.
Do you know the type of band I want to be in is like the Bleachers?
Okay.
Like, that is the type of band I would want to be in. That I would have a blast being in a band like that.
I will say that is part of, like... I don't ever want to be, like, the person on stage.
Yeah.
DJing is cool because you can kind of get away with being, like...
A bit of,
like, not the focus. It's more the music, but... To play in a band like that, would be pretty sick.
It would be fun, right?
Yeah.
I know.
Or, like, my newest obsession is Hermanos Gutierrez.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, obviously, not me, but, like, that also would
Maybe
be, like,
you
my
need
dream.
To be in a band.
Yeah, except I hate The Road.
Oh, God.
Do you like The Road?
I like The Road in short doses, and I... hate touring, but I absolutely love playing, that it outweighs being on the road.
Gotcha.
But somebody asked me, I was on the road with a band this year for 2 weeks. That was my limit. I was done.
100%.
And then, but I had a lot of fun, but I was also done. And then that same band asked me to go on the road for 3 weeks with them in Europe. And I turned it down, and all my friends were like, are you crazy?
Smart.
3 weeks touring around every major city in Europe. And I was like, no, that sounds like we were going to Paris, Rome, like Italy. Mm-hmm. Like we were going everywhere. I was like, no, that sounds awful. And I love the band. I love playing with them. But I was like, I cannot do that. But if it was my band, I think I would.
Right. I think
that's
also, back to back, like the road is brutal. I'll go do fun shows like with Sasha. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we're gonna do like a late night show. Like that's fun. It's like
yeah. You've done like
I love doing
you did those. Colbert, right?
Yeah, that's
like yeah.
Arguably the worst things to pop out and do because like if you fuck up, you fucked up.
There's no denying that you fucked up.
And I have, but luckily
no, you fucked up a late night performance.
I did on what was it? Maybe Jimmy Kimmel or something.
And they have to do it again, or what happened?
Yeah, they give you another take.
And everybody looked at you. Sasha looks at you, and she goes,
I think someone else fucked up, so I just pretended like I played it perfect.
Ah.
Yeah, I didn't have to.
Was it Danny?
I don't remember who played on that. I don't remember. I was playing bass, though, so it was pretty easy to.
Bass is so easy.
I love
that's the
See,
dirty
I play
secret.
Bass. I don't want to play guitar on tour. I want to play bass.
No, that's fine.
Because I want to be able to, like.
Easy.
Even if I'm, like, had a few too many beers before, like, I'm still good.
You're still good. Bass is so easy.
I love playing bass.
Yeah. Like, you think bass, like, oh, give credit to bass players. No, it's easy. To be a great bass player, really hard. But
Correct.
Your bass level of bass playing, easy.
Basically one note.
Very simple.
No chords. Easy.
Root tones.
Like, we're not talking about Thundercat here. We're talking about...
No. To be a great bass player, if you're going to be like,
That's almost harder than guitar, I think.
I think it is because it's all feel. You can get away with bad feel on
true.
Guitar, but not if you're a great bass player. You have to have great feel.
Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah. King Henry on the podcast. We're wrapping up. Thanks for coming by.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll
thanks
do it again.
Out of the house.
We got him out of the house.
Come by.
Have we
tread sometime.
Oh, my God. I'd love to, but I can't show up uninvited. But what have we left anything out? Has anything been unsaid? Is there anything we need to push that we're not plugging?
No, there's no plugging.
There's no plugging.
No.
That's the brilliance of Henry.
Nothing to pitch.
He's got nothing to pitch. He's just here. He's just here for the hang.
Just my only pitch is invite me golfing if you're out there and you need a fourth.
Who's my fourth?
No, I mean like anyone who needs a fourth.
Oh.
Not you. You're not invited.
That's what I was getting at. I was like, I'm trying to find
a third and fourth.
Do you ever go to Topgolf?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, me too. I've been to Topgolf maybe 2 or 3 times.
I thought about joining a simulator club. I almost
really?
Did. It's like the nerdy version of Topgolf where you work on your your speed and all that stuff.
Bobby's got a simulator in his house.
Yeah, he's played on his. Yeah.
Have you? Yeah. Is that a good one?
It's the nicest one.
Really?
Yeah. Which he moved down the road and I'm sure he took it with him, but I it's really funny actually when he got it and I was asking him about it. We were playing golf, I was like, you hitting the TrackMan much? And he's like, no, you know what the funny thing about that is? He's like, when you can finally afford one is when you really don't have time to use it. And I was like,
he said that to me too, actually.
So real.
Isn't that funny?
Which right. I mean, to put a TrackMan in your house, you're looking at like,
how much is
the way he did it?
How much is it? It's like
$100K.
Is it really $100K?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
To like properly do it, yeah.
I wouldn't spend $100K on that.
Plus, you need a ceiling that's like 12 feet at least.
Yeah.
Like you can. I follow r/simulator on Reddit.
Yeah.
I was really into trying to build my own, and people build the roguest shit at their houses.
Do you have one or no?
No.
Stupid.
Because it's like I don't want like a half-assed version of it. I would rather just have the real thing.
If you had $100K just blow on something stupid, would you blow it on that?
At this point,
you had to spend on something stupid. You couldn't save it. You had to spend it.
I would probably spend it on a country club membership instead.
Really?
Yeah.
Get you out of the house.
I would join I'd join Richland.
That's $100K?
Yeah. It's more than $100K actually. It's like $150K, I think.
Oh my god.
Brentwood is like $90K. I've done all the research. I've been through it all.
Oh, my God.
It's brutal out here because of people like me. 6 years ago, you probably could have gotten in pretty cheap somewhere.
Now you're driving up the prices.
I am.
They're really cursing your name when they talk about you.
Us L.A. folk. But let the record show I'm from New Mexico. I just lived in L.A.
Let the record be shown. All right, we're wrapping up here. We're out of time. Henry, we
Zach,
did it. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Coming on.
Thanks
See
for
you
having
next
me,
time.
Man.
We did it.